Welcome to Psychology Has It Backwards. This series will question the assumption that people are psychologically broken and need to be fixed. We will talk about how seeing people as innately healthy will change all of your interactions and outcomes. This is a true paradigm shift, and it simplifies the entire process of dealing with mental distress and allows for more profound and immediate changes.
Aloha, and welcome to Psychology Has It Backwards. I'm Christine Heath, coming to you from the Big Island of Hawaii, and I am here with my very, very close spiritual sister, is what she is. Yeah, but we're sisters with other mothers, and fathers, I might add. But, but we are definitely. Very, very, very close in our friendship and our love. And I just think that she is the most amazing woman. And, you know, the thing about Judy is that she never stops changing. And she's just really taken her own understanding to new depths. And she's just got a beautiful feeling. So I'm really looking forward to doing this podcast with her today.
Well, thank you. And Chris says these beautiful things, and I thought, well, that's exactly how I feel about Chris, but I can't just repeat it. But anyway, I think we know that we have a kind of mutual respect and love for each other that grows over the years. So I'm glad to be here, and I love our topic for the day.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because people tell us all the time, we get a lot of feedback on these podcasts, and one of the things that people tell us is they can feel what a great friendship we have. The topic we decided to talk about today is happiness as the goal of therapy or coaching, which is novel in the rest of the world. Like, happiness seems to be like something that comes from what you have, from your children or from your job or from, you know, buying a new car, or it's something that seems conditional. But what we're looking at is happiness as being the product of living in a state of well-being. And that's the feeling that Judy and I live in. You know, we're happy people. And so that's what connects us on that spiritual level. We love to laugh, and we love to listen, and we don't take life too seriously. We don't take each other too seriously. And it's just something that we were thinking about, because happiness is not something you'd see in a treatment plan. The goal of this client is to find happiness and to live in happiness most of the time. You know, like, there's a word called euthymia, which is kind of means living in a positive state of mind, which sometimes people will use, but very seldom is that like the goal, because a lot of people don't even think that that's something that a psychologist or a therapist would work on, because it's conditional, right? But what we're doing that's so different is that happiness is what we want to go for first, and then we start to see how to do our life differently. So the first episode we thought we'd do today would be on just looking at why happiness would be the goal of therapy or coaching, or in psychology, why would a person want to put that as something that would be helpful to a person? And then the part two will be, what does life look like when you're coming from happiness? I mean, what does it look like to not get stressed? And I'm telling you, there's a lot of people in my profession that you would not say they were happy people. You know, you would say they were serious, or they're burned out, or that they're compulsive sometimes, or they're struggling with their own demons. You know, but really what we have to offer the field is an understanding of what mental well-being is, not something that you do to get it. Like the state of Hawaii has started a new department of wellness and resilience as part of the governor's office. So I'm going to be contacting them. But, You know, it's unusual for people in the world to see that as a priority. You know, that's kind of what we want to be looking at is people actually being happy. Mm-hmm. Like, even, you know, we all have our little idiosyncrasies. We all get, you know, caught up in things and we all take things seriously once in a while. But when you know that happiness is available to you, it makes staying in those other states of mind not much fun, because you start to like make a comparison. Like when I lived in seriousness, I didn't know there was something beyond that called happiness. Mm-hmm. I was searching for it. I wanted it. Like at one level, I guess I knew deep down that happiness existed, but it seemed like it existed for everybody else and not for me. And so I would do different things, searching for it, looking for it, trying to find the right man that would make me happy. You know, that was, I for sure thought that men were the source of happiness. And then I became a marriage and family therapist and realized that if that was the case, I wouldn't have a job. But, you know, the thing is that happiness is inside of us no matter what we're going through. And, you know, we've both gone through lots of family issues. You know, like my middle stepson got leukemia and died. I've had a house fire. I've had many animals die. I've had my parents die. I mean, we've gone through the regular things that people go through in life. I'm not special in that way, but, you know, it's such a gift to know that you can be happy even if those kinds of things are going on. And what a gift that brings to the world. What a gift that brings to people. You know, I think one of the things that when Peter, who's my stepson, was in the hospital, he was in the hospital for 8 months. He went into the hospital October 11th and he died on May 11th. He had this kind of leukemia that basically nobody recovers from. They say 98% of people die from it, but I think the other two are probably misdiagnosed. But during that time, it was awful, you know, on one level, because if you thought about how awful it was, you'd really suffer. And so we just all decided that we were going to just live in happiness as a way to support him. And not only did it support him, but it supported all the people in the hospital that worked with him, and it supported us. And it was there was a clergyman that worked there and was seeing Peter, and he was a therapist with a doctor of divinity, I think. And he decided that Peter needed to deal with the fact that he was dying and that this is what he needed to be focusing on. And, you know, it's like he needed to be taking care of that. And he'd go in and talk to Peter, and Peter would be like, "What is this guy talking about, me dying? I don't know I'm dying. Am I dying?" And I said, "Well, Peter, you want me to talk to him? I can talk to him and have him not come." And Peter finally said, yeah, would you do that? So I found him. And I said to him, I said, you know, we've decided to take a different approach to this. We're not going to be focusing on having him deal with the seriousness of this and how bad it is. We all understand that's what's going on. But it provides him more of an uplifted feeling for us just to stay in the present moment and be happy and share that happiness with him. And he said, oh, well, I think that's a terrible idea. It's my job to make sure that my patients know what's going on and that they deal with it. And I said to him, I said, okay, let me put this a different way. If you don't stop coming in and talking to him about this, I'm going to have to go to the head of the hospital board if that's what it takes, which I do have a friend who's on the board here. So FYI, you're not allowed to come back in there and talk about this stuff. And he goes, well, I'm going to do it anyway, because that's what my patient needs. And I said, okay. So I called his doctor, and his doctor was an old MASH doctor. And so I'm talking to him about what happened. And he said, well, Chris, he said, just tell him to stop coming. I said, well, I did. But he said he's not going to, because it's his patient. He needs to deal with it. He goes, oh, and he hangs up the phone. And then the next day I discovered that the minister was on vacation. And he was on vacation for a month. But, you know, it was so obvious. Like I felt for the guy because, you know, here he is, a man of God. You know, all religions say, you know, God is love. But it was just that his seriousness got into his thinking. And it really kept him focusing on that and scared the crap out of my son. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's kind of it's a really great example, I think, about how when you focus on being happy, you're doing that to uplift the person's state of mind, and then they can deal with whatever's going on with them.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very interesting story to me because of the insistence on dealing with something over which you have no control. Mm-hmm. And that's a perfect example. When we say, you know, well, you've got problems, you've got to deal with those problems. It's like, dealing with those problems is a moment-to-moment experience. It's like you can't decide today, okay, I'm going to, you know, this is going to happen in 2 months and I better prepare. Because whatever you prepare for or whatever you think is going to happen is never what happens anyway, exactly that way. Mm-hmm. But if we deal with our own state of mind and we find happiness and peace, happiness and contentment is what Sid always talked about, then you open your door of wisdom, essentially. You know, you're at peace in your own mind. You're quieting your thinking about what's wrong and all the terrible things that could happen, your worries, your anxieties. Everything gets quiet. And if you need a good idea, you're much more likely to get it from your wisdom and in a good state of mind, in a happy state of mind. Plus, no matter what happens in life, we can either live through it and be happy, or we can live through it and be haunted. And you know, being haunted by something that you can't change and you can't control is throwing away the greatest gift that we've been given as human beings, which is the ability to think and change from within, to change our thinking, to see when our thinking takes us into negative, sad feelings, and realize I don't have to be there. I can be there, but I don't have to. And I never saw happiness as a choice. I thought that was interesting too in what you said, Chris, about you decided that happiness was the route you were going to take to keep yourselves, all of you, going through this experience. And I never realized that happiness was a choice until I got involved in the principles. I thought happiness was something that happened to you sometimes. And I didn't always attach it to things outside of myself, but in moments when I just happened to be clear-headed and happy, I was just sort of feeling lucky. I'm having a good day, you know. It never occurred to me that that I was creating it or that I was creating my unhappiness. And I think I've had clients that have a lot of trouble with that. Like, well, why would people punish themselves? Well, it's very innocent. It's because the intellect is a storehouse of already known facts. And if you have a lot of unhappy facts in your head, that's what you're playing around with. If you spend all your time in an active, busy state of mind trying to figure things out and find the answer and decide what to do and all of that. But when you start to realize that there are no new answers in the old. You know, there are answers, whatever you thought of last year may have helped you last year, but this is a new year. And you can't just say, oh, that, I mean, it's like when corporations say, well, we've never tried that before. Well, that's the point. So it's like, okay, you've tried what you've tried so far, and now you're looking for, you know, a change or something new or better returns or something. Well, you can't really do what you've always been doing and expect a different result. And yet we have that tendency when we're caught in our intellect, that's the direction the intellect wants us to go because it's busy. It's a, I'll keep looking. It's got to be in here somewhere. You know, it's like my daughter lost her keys in her own home. This is really funny. She had a friend over for dinner and she has a ton of keys. She's got keys to so many different places that she goes to. And so she had dinner, had the friend over for dinner. The next morning she got up and she was going to go back to her office at the University of Pittsburgh to do some work. And she couldn't find the key. And she couldn't find the key. And she couldn't find the key. And they tore the house apart. And she's like, I haven't left the house. They've got to be here. So I was over there, you know, about 2 hours after they started looking for the keys. And I said, so where were they? She said, well, I always throw them on the counter there by the door. And I said, well, where did your friend put her purse? And she said, well, people set things down there just like your purse is there now. And I said, maybe your friend picked up the keys accidentally. And Sarah called her friend, and her friend looked in her purse, and she had Sarah's keys. And Sarah was like, how did you do that? I said, I assumed that your first thought was correct. You had not left the house, and you had your keys, or you wouldn't have gotten back in your house. So number one is they had to be in the house. And number two is you don't have that big a house, and you've looked everywhere, and you didn't see them, so somebody took them. And you had somebody here last night who could have picked them up. That, you know, it's what occurred to me. And she's like, oh, I can't believe it. So her friend, you know, got in her car and rushed over and dropped off the keys. But we do this to ourselves so often because instead of getting quiet and just staying in a good state and knowing it's going to work out, it's going to be fine, you know, just living from that perspective, we get all frantic and excited and upset and anxious. And then we go right to the figuring out part of our brain. And we tell our brain, okay, you got to work on this problem right now. We got to get to work on it because I got to go. And then the brain says, well, let's see. Have you looked there? Have you looked there? Because all the brain knows is what you've done. It doesn't know what you haven't done. Mm-hmm. So when you, the intellect is of absolutely no value when you're confronted with a puzzling situation, which you just don't know the answer to. But if you can just, you know, be a little less agitated and a little more quiet and happy, just happy knowing it's going to be fine. It has to be here somewhere. We'll get the answer, you know, and just quiet down instead of getting all revved up. You'd be surprised how life works out. Mm-hmm. And I think that all of us who grew up like I did, trained to get smart. You know, go to school, study hard, you know, get good grades, go to college, go on, you know, to more school, that you start thinking that the only value that your thinking offers to you is what you know. I certainly thought that as, you know, what I know is all I have. And I remember it was either my dad or my uncle who said, you know, you should really take advantage of your education because knowledge is the one thing that nobody can take away from you. Which is true. It's not the one thing, though. Nobody can take it away from you. But happiness is the one thing that you were born with, and nothing can touch it. And that's what people miss, that happiness is a deeper feeling than thinking. It's before thought. It's the state that we're in when we know we're okay, we're just human beings, and we're fine. In this moment, we're fine. And in this moment, then, that we get wisdom, which is deeper than our own personal thinking. It's a new thought that arises in us just exactly when we need it. And that's happened. You know, at this point, you know, I trust it, and I don't worry about it. But I remember so many times in my life when I would just be fortunate enough to be reflective or to be taking a bath or taking a walk or swimming or something, and suddenly I'd get some new, completely new and sometimes a little weird idea. And I would think, oh my gosh, where did that come from? Oh, well, I'll do that. It makes sense, you know, and then I would do it. But I never nurtured that feeling. You know, I never asked myself, why is that so different from how I suffer when I try to figure things out? Why is that so different for me?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's also, it's like a barometer for me, you know, like if I haven't like had a good belly laugh for a while, I know I'm just in my head too much, mm-hmm. You know, because that's part of the thing about being happy is that life is funny.
Yeah. It is.
No, it's in, and it's sweet, you know. Like I was thinking, one way of kind of for people to do a little assessment of themselves is to look at what they get on Instagram or TikTok, because what you get is what you're looking at, right? Yeah. And so they keep sending you more of whatever it is you look at. Well, what I look at a lot is Golden Retriever movies. So I get all of these videos with golden retrievers and dogs doing funny things and dancing. Like, I love dancing, right? So people are doing these dances, and it just makes me smile. And it just, you know, I just love to watch it. Whereas I have a client that gets all these things that she finally said to me. She said, "Do I have borderline personality disorder? I've been told I do." I said, "Who told you that?" And she said, "Oh, well, that's what I get on TikTok." I said, "Well, what are you watching on TikTok?"
So I'd rather enjoy what I'm doing right now.
Siri just said, "I rather enjoy what I'm doing right now. Be quiet." So, you know, it's kind of like awareness, consciousness of happiness is really one of the things that is helpful to people. And when you're, as a therapist or a coach, and you're talking to people about lightening up and, you know, not taking your life so seriously and finding a lightheartedness, that is so helpful to people. Like, you know, even with Peter, when he was in the intensive care unit most of the time, I would say 75% of the time he was in the intensive care unit. And when he passed away, it was the time for him to be taken off his machines, the nurses gave him a lay, and they told him that he brought them all back to what nursing was really all about.
Wow.
Now, that's kind of that when you're and he just was a happy guy, you know, he just wanted to have fun and was lighthearted. And he was a really, a very fun loving kind of person. And that feeling gets contagious, right? You know, like you get the giggles and then somebody else gets the giggles. And sometimes I'll happen in a session where they'll say something that's so ridiculous, I start laughing. And then they start laughing, and then we're both laughing, and then we're laughing because we're laughing. You know, it's just this, it just kind of builds on itself and just has people are drawn to that. You know, like I always think of people that are looking for their, you know, love of their life. And they're walking around, like me, I was walking around really serious, my arms crossed in front of me. Like, who would want to come up and talk to me? Nobody.
No. Nobody was happy.
nobody was happy, right? Yeah, other people. But you know, that's kind of the deal. It's like you've got to let yourself feel that and be that and see that that's really inside of you all the time. No matter what's going on in your life, you can always lighten up and be happy. And when you become aware of that, then being stressed and serious takes on a different experience. Because it doesn't feel so good anymore. Whereas when you're living there, it feels normal and happiness looks like it's weird. Like when I was really stressed out before I learned the principles, I thought people that were happy were obnoxious, you know, because they were like, this is a serious world. There's problems to be dealt with here. You gotta take life seriously.
Yeah.
So if people were happy, they were kind of, in my mind, they were like ditzy in their head, or they weren't like really seeing the truth about life.
Or stoned.
Yeah. No, I didn't think that. I just thought they were different.
I always thought that.
Yeah.
And the other thing I think that I noticed when I was serious, because I was very serious before I got involved in the principles. And it's not like I didn't have a fun life or anything, never had a good time or anything, but in my mind all the time were the problems I had to deal with. Even in the background, sometimes they were playing in the background, but they were always there. And I saw them as problems. And the thing that so surprised me when I started meeting other people, and there weren't that many to meet, but there were a handful of people that I met early on in the principles who just weren't like that. You know, like they never talk, you go out to dinner with a bunch of people and they never talked about what was going wrong or you know, how terrible this or that was in the world. They just talked about life in a very upbeat way. And they genuinely were happy. They exuded this feeling that was so comforting.
Yeah.
But when I remember the first time I went to lunch with Elsie Spittle and some, I forget who else, but Reese, somebody in Tampa. And I felt like I didn't really belong at that lunch because I couldn't think of anything to say. Because the two of them were just telling jokes and laughing and having this great time. And I had to get back to work. And I was thinking, oh, I got to drive all the way back to, you know, at an hour's drive to get back to work. And I'm looking at my watch. And I remember towards the end of the lunch, the person we were with said to Elsie, you know, we're going to have to work on her happiness. And I was very, very new at that time. And I thought, oh, well, it sounds good to me.
Oh, that's
true. You know, it was just, I didn't know how to work on it. So I figured, okay. But I realized that feeling does, even if you are, you know, caught up in your own thinking, when you're with happy people, even though it's hard to admit, you really want that. You know, it's natural for us to really be drawn to that because that's really what got me going. I thought, I can't believe these people have the same kind of lives that I do. They're, you know, they're living in the same world, mm-hmm. but they're not living in the same world.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to live in the world that they're seeing because I would love to feel that lighthearted all the time.
I remember thinking the same thing when I went down for my training down in Miami, mm-hmm. and I would be hanging out with these people. I didn't want to say anything because to me, I sounded like I was this loud, harsh voice. I mean, I could just feel the difference between where they were talking from and where I was talking from.
Right.
And I was like, wow, these guys just live in such a magical world. It's so beautiful. But I think like you, I was interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
That was fascinating to me. I wanted to move in that direction. And so what I did is like, whatever they did, I did it. You know, like they wouldn't talk about work and nobody talked about work. Nobody mm-hmm. ever talked about their work. And I always talked about work. That's all I did. My friends were all therapists. My clients were, that's all that I talked about. And so I was like, oh, what do I talk about? And it was like, oh my God, I have nothing else to talk about. And then I realized that I wasn't paying attention to anything else. There was a lot of other things.
Yeah.
You know, and then you get really fascinated by people mm-hmm. because what their world is like when they're talking about it from a beautiful feeling is like you literally go into that reality with them.
Right.
So there's nothing better than happiness. And that really should be the goal that we have in working with people. Because when you're happy, you start to see how you're taking yourself into seriousness, how you're taking mm-hmm. yourself into problem solving, how mm-hmm. you're taking yourself out of that quiet place where wisdom comes. Into the world of problems.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, we live in this problem-solving world that's getting us absolutely nowhere because we really have to have a kind of a spiritual lift to mm-hmm. see things differently. Otherwise, we just keep doing the same thing over and over again.
Right. Well, we're once more out of time, but I think that's a beautiful place to end. You know, it's like we need to just see it and long for it, look for it, and you stumble into it. And so hope you have a happy week.
Yeah, stay tuned next week. We'll continue talking about living in happiness and what that looks like and what we've learned from that. So we'll see you next week.
Okay.
Aloha.
Bye.
We hope you heard something new and that you will continue to join us to challenge the prevailing thinking about the possibilities for health in everyone. To subscribe to the podcast, visit our website at psychologyhasitbackwards.com.